Okay, guys, I think let's not punish those who are on time, and let's start, especially because I see that quite a few are on the call already. Probably even all of us. We have received apologies from Martin. He informed us long ago, even before, I think about a month ago, so he definitely excused. So let's start with the call then, with our discussions, and let's start by the with the update on the council election guideline. And first one is about the discussion we had regarding the time. As you remember, according to the bylaws, we're supposed to have our new councillor at the last CCNSO meeting of the year, which is in autumn. But our current procedure is that in autumn we have Q&A session with the candidate, and after that we have election, which means that our councillors take their seats right after the first meeting of the year, which is not what bylaws oblige us to do. So we presented this issue to the council and asked for their opinion, and basically no one objects to the current practice, which means that we just go on as we were doing for years now. So we do not change our approach to timing. That's kind of good news. Oh, as a lawyer, I think it would be better to do as the bylaws prescribe. But on the other hand, I think that it's it's absolutely fine to do as we do, and we don't have to start our process more than a half a year before. Before the new councillor takes the seat, because quite many things may change during that time. Okay, so now about the new the updates to the guideline we're reviewing. So, Kim, may I ask you to show the Google Doc? There are quite a few changes. Mostly by Alejandra, and then I added few bits too, and so let's discuss it. Now, but before we do that, I see that Bart has his hand up. Yes, please, Bart.
Katrina, maybe you want to inform Council about, or the GRC about the adoption of the guideline before we move forward. So that's good news for the GRC.
That's true. It's not on our agenda. Somehow we missed it when we planned the agenda. You're absolutely right. Before we proceed with routine work on yet another guideline, tell you that the council has adopted the our guideline on the CCSO council practices. So congratulations, we have one new guideline already adopted and published. Of course, our colleagues from CCSO members still may object, but they haven't done it during public consultation period, so I hope it won't happen now either. Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for your involvement, your contribution to the guideline. And now let's go back to the guideline CCNSO council election procedure. I tried to resolve some of my comments, but there are still plenty of them. I think at some point we definitely need to make a clearer version, so that it would be easier to read. Okay, Alejandra, maybe you start with your update, and then I will take over and share some of my ideas.
Yes, please.
Well, hi. Good morning, everyone. This is a little bit messy right now because we have a lot of comments, so it would be a great idea if we could clean it up soon. Well, I try to make it a little bit more explanatory. And, for example, one thing that I thought it was not clear is who could be elected as a CCNSO council. So that's the first addition I made to the guidelines. And there it is, a suggestion. Because in there was no description in any part of the document. Also, well, let me move forward. I must admit that I didn't have any chance to see your comments since they were done overnight. So I'll continue. Another thing that we agreed it was critical is to put the two timelines, right? The one that we already have and the suggestion if we will do it accordingly to the bylaws. So that's why I added two paragraphs in the appointment of the election manager in 3.3.1. And also on the nomination timeline. They are basically the same, but I added some notes just to see in which time of the year they were taking place. And I did this by looking through the last election that we had and then taking that as a reference. I thought that would be a good timing. So we can go forward. Let me see. And I think that as a table, it will be a little more clear than what was before that said, for example, date for call for nomination plus some weeks and some days. To me, it is a little bit confusing, so I did it in reference to the ICANN meeting where the candidates were going to participate in the Q&A. So moving backwards regarding that and then forward. It's a suggestion. I'm not sure if you like it. Also, let's go forward. I shift content. And there is, it was not really, really clear in who could do this. So that's why I added that part, I think, to be specific. Also, I added something to the self-nomination of what we discussed the previous meeting. Let me go a little bit forward. And regarding the process, I try to simplify it a little bit. Since we were talking about having a form, a submission form, that's what I tried to simplify here. For example, it says, the election manager will send an email to the community with instructions. That should be enough because if we start to say what the procedure will be there, then it's complicated. Also, the nominations will be submitted through a web form. I know we talked that we shouldn't put any exact mean of how we're going to do so, but I think it will be a good idea to put at least this one, as in it will be through a web form, and it should be, to me at least, obvious that this submission will go to the election manager at a point. So if you are filling the web form, it should go somewhere. So, but you don't need to put it like explicitly here in the guidelines. And that's what I did with that part, making it a little more simpler in the language. And then the next thing I did as a sort of rearrangement of things, thinking about the web form and how it should be filled. So the first thing you should do is, if you are nominating someone, you should first input your full name and your email address. Then there should be some sort of drop-down menu selecting the region so there's no mistake. And according to the region, select the CCTLD, also maybe a drop-down selection thingy in the web form. Select the correct CCTLD and then input the name of the candidate and the email. It's more like a step-by-step process. And for seconding, I was thinking also in a little more detail on first filling again the name of the seconder and the email of the seconder, and then select the region. And since the candidates are already there, because they were all already nominated, then they should select which candidate they're seconding and not input again the information. And that's it for that. Let me see. I'm moving a little bit forward in the document. And then there was a this confusion regarding when the CCTLD can become a member and then participate in the process. So I did something with that later. I cannot see it right now. Let me see if I can find it. I know I moved this out of this of the eligibility to vote. Let me see. When this is in the members are allowed to vote. I cannot find it right now.
No, it was there. It's definitely there, a bit closer to the beginning.
Okay. And that's it for my comments. Thank you.
Yeah, I removed it from here because it was already mentioned earlier in the document.
That's it for me. I hope to have feedback from you and to make it, to be allowed to make it cleaner, and to, if Katrina may accept some of the comments or changes or.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we can. I have a couple of comments there in line, but probably we should not spend too much time on this. We can talk later over Skype or whatever. So, are there any questions? Oh, yeah. So, on your screen, you see the. Pink ones are insertions from something editing from me, and the I don't know how to call this color. The other color, the greenishly bluish color, those are edits by Alejandra. So if you have any questions regarding bluishly greenish. Submissions, then please feel free to ask. If not, then probably we'll go back to the beginning of the document and I'll try to highlight some of the things that I have added. Oh, yes, David, please.
Thanks, Katrina. It's David McCauley for the transcript. First, thanks to you and Alejandra and to Yoke, to the folks that have experience serving as counselors or secretariat for these elections. I think the voice of experience is extraordinarily valuable, and so I appreciate that. My question, and I can't remember if it was blue or language or what, but it had to do with the fact that to second a nomination, there was a requirement for regional consistency. In other words, if someone's nominated from a certain region, the seconder has to come from the same region. Is that historically been the case? And I was just wondering why that was and if it's perhaps too limiting. And the only other thing I would say is it would be nice after this go to sort of see a cleaner version. I just struggle with Google Docs, and it's just a problem I have. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, David. Oh, the thing is that we have three councillors per region, and these councillors are selected and elected by the city and some members in that particular region. So, of course, SECs from that region have to be the ones who nominate and second for their candidate. So I think it's just a natural thing. Bart, you want to add something?
Yeah, just to confirm what you just said. Say, council elections has always, and by definition, if you look at the bylaws, are organized at the regional level, in the sense that the CCTLDs from a region select a council. The council doesn't need to be from that region. That's the exception. The CCTLD managers, so the members, should be from that region. So that's why the seconder needs to be from the region as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Eduardo, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Katrina. And as David, I have to thank a lot of for you, Alejandra, Joe, and your work on this. It is very useful. I guess we have a very good advance with this guideline right now. And I promise to do my own work on this during this week. But now, on the presentation, I have a question about the feeling of this group on one particular point, which is in the 3.1 on the guideline, which is about the eligibility of the elected to be elected at the city initial council. So my question is, what have to be there, the credentials? What have to be there, the background? What have to be there, the condition of the people, of the person who will be nominated? As we have now, we have more or less a definition of the procedure, but we don't have the main answer for the question of this point. Who or what are the credentials to be elected as city municipal council? Could be an individual member that has to be a worker working or in one CCTLD, or just an individual that can come from everywhere but supported by three CCTLDs. One that make the nomination into the support that nomination. That's one question that I have. The other one is in the language of this specific at same point, which is 3.1, it say that a councillor can be an individual nominate. Second, an elected are described in this guideline. My question is, if it can be or have to be, I don't know, just two questions that I have, but just for this point. And thank you again for the work done on this.
Thank you very much, Eduardo. Now you move to the bits that I have added, and therefore, this is the first bit. Last time we decided that there's a need to define who can be elected, nominated for that respect. So answering your question, who can be elected, whoever gets the support of the CC and so on in that particular region. But here in this paragraph, I tried to... this is the outcome of several discussions we had before, and well, this is my proposal. Of course, we don't have to go with this. This is my proposal to start a discussion. So, basically, this, actually, I think that's also according to the bylaws. A council can be any individual, but they need to be nominated, seconded, and elected according to the procedure that is described in the guidelines. And this is one of the, this is a quite controversial point here, therefore it needs to be discussed first within this group and then with the council and, of course, with the business or community. Why do we elect people, and in what capacity we select and elect these people? So by now, most of the time, we select those who work for CTQLD. And what happens if a person leaves the CTQLD? If that's enough for us to consider that, this particular person has been elected, should not eligible to be a counselor, then was it really elected as a representative of the particular CCTOD? That's a question, and I personally think that CCTO members select people for their, I'd like to hope that that's the case, that people are selected for their for their willingness to contribute, for their knowledge, for their experience, for their some personal things or whatever, and not because they work for a big CCTOD or they sponsor CCTO cocktails or something. So, and therefore I think that if a person leaves a CCTOD, it is not the reason to dismiss the person as a CC NSL counselor, as long as the person contributes, there's no conflict of interest, and as long as CC NSL members, and I think this is the most important part, as long as CC NSL members in that particular region elected this person, as long as they support and they, it's okay with them that this person still represent the region on the concerns on the CCTO council. So this is the wording. Please feel free to edit, to comment, to change the idea. So I see that Alejandra has a question here. Yes, Alejandra, please.
Thank you, Katrina. Just taking Eduardo's question, if I am correct, you can only nominate someone that is currently working at a CCTLD. What happens afterwards is if somehow they stop working for the CCTLD, if they can continue, it's another thing. Is that correct?
So you're asking me, or it's a question to Alejandro, Eduardo, sorry. The bylaws are not saying that this person should be working for a CCTLD. So far that has been practice. Usually those who are working for CCTLD, even more specifically, working towards something from members. It never, I think it never left the group. It's not, even working for a CTA, it's not a member of the CTA. So, but I see that Bart wants to comment properly on answer this question. Yes, please, Bart.
Yes, if you look at the bylaws, so the way it's framed, and that was deliberately done at the time. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, yeah. It's, I'm having a new toy again. If you look at the bylaws, it explicitly states that it's a councillor is elected in his personal capacity. This was done at the time when the bylaws, say, the system was created to ensure the best candidates. Say, the issue that, say, I think the system is currently struggling with is that, what we saw in the past is that during their term, councillors changed their affiliations. There are a couple of examples. And there were a couple of, people acted differently after changing the affiliation. So that was one of the reasons why we raised it in one of the prior calls, is what does the working group suggest with people who change their affiliation during their term on the council? Say, once you know somebody is not working with a CCTLD manager, but he or she is still elected, say, that's no problem. But even then, that person could change his or her affiliation. If you have, say, like in the past, somebody is affiliated with a CCTLD, but during the term, his or her job ends with the CCTLD, should that person still stay on the CCMSO council, yes or no, or should it be left to the council to decide, or should automatically the councillorship end? And maybe another one, and which is not included, is if you look at some of the working groups, say there is, especially, for example, the CCWD, or the Katrina and Stephen and the others are doing in Byron in the new created structures, there is this commitment to participate actively in the meetings, and maybe that should be included as well. So if you look at the attendance sheets, etc., I think they show a clear picture. So maybe you want to include something like a commitment to attend at least X number of meetings on a yearly basis. Thank you, Katrina. That's all for me for the time.
Thank you very much, Bart. Just want to stress that there are some other parts that have been added to the guideline, and it's about one of the most important is how to recall a councillor, so please bear that in mind while discussing this particular paragraph, that there will be a mechanism to recall a councillor. David, please.
Thanks, Katrina. David McCauley again. I just wanted to say in this respect, I think that the idea that, that we can design this up front is more difficult, and I like the idea of perhaps making removal a little bit easier and less of a bad statement about anyone in case of changed affiliation, etc. But it strikes me that there might be an academic who's not employed by a CCLD who is specialized in studying country code domains that might be a good candidate. It just seems that there's going to be people, retired folks, people like Keith Davidson, that would be good candidates that are no longer working for CCTLDs that should not be excluded. And so it strikes me that, the other thing that's changing is there are a number of CCTLDs who are now in the age of the new GTLDs, applying for names and sort of becoming hybrid organizations. And so it strikes me that what we ought to do is trust the voters and trust the nominators and the seconders, and make removal easier and less of a character statement in case circumstances change. And that's my thoughts on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Alejandro.
Yes, thank you. The reason for my question is that it is currently in the guideline. It says that it should be provided the full name of the nominator and its CCTLD and region. That's why I was asking this, if it should still be required or if it ever was, that one should, when nominating someone, should put the CCTLD where it either belongs or maybe has support from. That's the motive of my question.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I think that the person who has been nominated should not have a CCTLD, necessarily a CCTLD associated with that particular person. But yes, the person nominated and those who second, they need to be they need to indicate their CCTLD because they have to verify if they actually are CCTLD members, because only members are allowed to vote. Okay, this is something to think about. We do not have to solve it now, but definitely this is something to think about. So it will make the version cleaner so that it's easier for you to read and then read it again and think about the whole thing. Okay, now can we go down? If you can let me scroll it, I can do it myself. If not, then please go, let's scroll down. Scroll down, 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 down. Some more pinky stuff. Oh, wait, okay, here, currently 3.4.1.1, but we have to do something with the numbering, more heading 1 level guideline. David, you have a question, something for a previous discussion? Yes, please.
No, sorry, I don't know how that, I thought I had lowered my hand.
No, you raised it again. Okay, thanks. Well, about self-nominations. So as we agreed, we allow self-nominations, but for self-nominations, I propose that we have 2 seconders. Because otherwise, it's a little bit unfair to those who nominated and seconded by somebody else. So there are actually 2 seasons or members supported, apart from the candidate him or herself, because which makes actually 3 CCTLD member. Yes, assuming that that person represents the CCTLD member. So just to make it more fair, and in case that the person who is nominated, self-nominating, is not CCTLD member, then we need to, I propose that we have 2 seconders. Okay, let's go. I see that Alejandra supports this idea. Okay, can we scroll down? I see that David also supports. Okay, go down. Okay, wait, 3.4.6, can we go back? This part seems too complicated to me. May I ask somebody to rephrase it and add that those people who self-nominate, the election manager should not ask for their, if they accept the nomination, I suppose. apparently they do, since they are nominating Saudi, just to save some time for election manager. I know somebody, anyone could volunteer to rephrase this, but we can do it later, of course. Okay, can we scroll down again? One more. Yeah, okay, 3, 6, yeah, go down. Yeah, more, scroll a little bit, scroll. Yes, okay, stop. Oh, that's too much. Can we go? can we go back to 3.7, and if possible to make it? Yep. So again, this is just a proposal. Don't shoot the messenger. It's me. It's just a proposal. So the idea is that when I was thinking about it, I wanted to make sure that. Nobody abuses the process, because once we have somebody elected to the council, of course it's good to have a mechanism to get rid of that person if the person does not deliver, leaves the current employment and these season some members in that particular region do not trust this person anymore, or any other reason, they need to have some tools to really recall the counselor. At the same time, I started on the assumption that this person had the majority of the support of the majority of season some members in that region. And therefore, we have to make sure that this person. We have to make sure that we have a support of at least a majority of business members for the repo of that particular person. So therefore, I put some. Threshold for those who can initiate the recall, so at the 3 or more seasonal members from a particular geographic region, so they initiate the process and they send their request to the secretariat or to the chair. And this request should have some explanation, reasoning why they believe that this counselor shouldn't be the counselor anymore. I also propose that we should wait at least 6 months after the counselor has been elected. In this case, why 6 months? Because we have to give some time to person to prove him or herself, and even if this person immediately after election leaves the employment of a CCTLD, then give the person some time to show that the person is still committed to the community. In response, Business Council appoints election manager. Within a week, election manager initiates a vote for a recall, and the vote for recall lasts 2 weeks. And when election manager informs the Business Council members about the this recall procedure, this explanation, the reasons why those who initiated, requested to start this procedure, why they believe the counselor should not serve any longer. So this explanation is also sent to the CCSO members so that they can decide for themselves. Okay, now I think maybe we should add also some explanation or some something from the counselors that being recalled. Yeah, probably that would be fair to present both sides of the story. And, the vote is, the council is recalled if, as I already mentioned, if a majority of CSUM members in that region votes for the recall. Otherwise, it wouldn't be fair because apparently the persons have been elected in the support, have support in the region. Then here I have another proposal that if a councillor substantially misbehaves or constantly ignores his or her responsibilities on the council, the chair may initiate the request to recall the councillor, and that is done again by the council, and the council may agree to proceed with the recall and the process described above, or may decide on some other action, for example, speak to the councillor and or demand some explanations from the person and so on. So this is the process. Well, this is the first proposal, first draft of the process. Feel free to comment now, or if you have any proposals, any questions now. If not, let's scroll a little bit down to the next step, and that's recall of the entire council. Again, I think that we need some threshold here. Proposal is 15 or more CSUM members from at least three geographic regions, and no less than three members per region. Again, as in the case of the recall of a particular councillor. And then they send requests, they decide that they want to fill the entire council, and again, the council is obliged to appoint the manager and establish a council recall timeline. We need a majority of support in each region. I have some doubts about North American region because that may not work. So maybe we should exclude the North American region and say that in each region except North American region. My proposal is majority. I think it's fairer than supermajority. But yes, I know that exactly. That's why I think it won't work for North American. That's why I think that North American region can, if we request majority in each region, then perhaps. It will be impossible to steal the entire council, so suppose that in each region except North America, we need a majority. So this is these are my proposals, so feel free to comment and propose any changes or anything. Yes, so anyone? No? Anyone want to start? Yeah, well, I think that majority of members without regional, I think it, again, would not be fair because councillors are elected. Again, I assume that they are elected. Each councillor is elected by a majority of their in their region. And that's why maybe they're quite happy with representatives. There should be therefore, I believe that it would be better to have a majority in each region, except North America. Yes, Bart, please.
Maybe it's more that you've got the first threshold, which is with a regional link. And say, in case of a complete recall of the membership, and say, you talk about the issue of real distrust between the members and the council. And if you have, and given how difficult it is, you could even install a quorum rule that at least, say, 40% of the members need to vote in such a circumstance, or 50% of the members. And of the members who have voted, the majority or supermajority needs to vote against or recall of the members. Because that's another issue. If you, for example, look at the PDP thresholds, they are higher than the one you just... They talk about the supermajority of the votes that are cast, but together with a quorum rule. And then there is no regional distribution because you got the regional distribution in the first place. So you talk about a real rift of trust between the members and the entire council. And I think if you, in such a circumstance, you don't want to do it again on a regional basis. But that's, say, based going back to the time of the season where it was created. And say the reasoning around the PDPs.
Yep. I think in this case, as you noted, it's a question of trust. And in that case, if majority distrusts the council, there's no need for a supermajority. I think it's better to not to have. Have majority. It's not like PDP when you're free to choose. You want to, yeah. Well, you kind of subscribe. Majority. No, I think majority. I was thinking about majority of members, not the vote cast. Because and even quorum will not. I was thinking about majority of members. Majority of members voted against it wouldn't be against. I think it would be wrong to have majority of the votes cast because 10% was not 5% even if we set requirements for quorum, again, it can be that still less than a half of members' the question of distrust, of course, is a tricky one. Yeah, even tricky one. 30% of members if we don't want to have any regional thing, half of members plus one. Yes, Bart.
Would it be an idea that, say, for the next call, that we just do some arithmetic around it, give some examples, what it implies, so we do not need to decide this on the fly. So have some different, say, what it really means if you have a quorum combined with majority, etc., and how many CCPODs are involved. Because that's, given the number of CCPODs currently, it's almost impossible, which is a good or a bad thing, but it's it requires at least 82 or 83 votes. So maybe it's just preparing some examples and so for discussion for the next call.
Yeah, Yep. Okay. Thank you, Bart. Yes, I can do that. Yes, I agree with people express their opinion by voting, and the more members we get, the more difficult it becomes. That's true, and that's what worries me with respect to changing the rules of the CCNSO. Yeah, I'm sure we can solve it somehow. At least propose some solutions to the community and see what they think. Okay, we can prepare some numbers for the next council call. And yeah, if there are no more comments or questions, then we can proceed with the next. Agenda item, which is to summarize, we make the person 3D and then send out to you again. Okay, as you may remember, we have worked on the guideline for specific preview team. And the guideline was adopted by the council, and we were kind of under impression that we operate according to the framework we have developed. But according to the bylaws, there cannot be some operating standards. And it said that the operating standards shall be developed through community consultation. That's the process. There's also something that needs to be developed, and everything around the specific reviews must be described in these operating standards. Currently, there's a call for volunteers for the third review, specific review team already, and still no operating standards in place. This is a presentation that was given by IconSoft during the meeting in Hyderabad. Can we move to the next slide? There are some bits that already have been developed and already in place the idea is that some of these components can be used for these operating standards. So far nothing. We haven't seen any draft yet. Can we move to the next slide? Yeah, this kind of shows what is. What issues must be included in these operating standards? And these lists are neither final nor exhaustive. I think we will send the presentation to you if you're interested. But this is just to give you some idea of what's really necessary. And the next one reviews what is coming up. As you can see, we have already SSR2, RDS, that's formerly who is, and ATRT is now have they already launched? Yeah, probably or soon will be launched, call for volunteers for that. And you can also see that the last one scheduled to start around July 2017 is the CCNSO review. So there is everything should be guided by operating standards, but they are not in place yet. The saddest part is that whenever they are in place, there might be a need for us to change our guidelines to adjust to the operating standards. There will be webinars. They are announced already. If you're interested to join the webinar and to learn more about operating standards, please, please do that. Yeah, unfortunately, Bart will need to leave in 3 minutes, make it to the airport, safe trip, Bart. Thanks for joining. I hope that we will manage without your brave support. We don't have many items left on the agenda. But I think the discussion was interesting so far. So next steps would be good to participate in the webinar. I'm certainly planning to do that. Then next agenda item. Stephen, anything you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yep, if you keep talking like that, we will hear you very well.
Okay. Few items to report on. First, things are progressing with the draft of the rejection action petition guideline. I circulated an outline to Jordan and Ben, and it met approval, so I've actually started drafting. Also, Ben has done some solid work on a glossary, which will become part of the guideline. Second, with regards to the Empowered Community Administration itself, I'm pleased to report that we now have ICANN staff support, and this will help us nudge ourselves forward into self-organizing, and we have scheduled a face-to-face in Copenhagen to meet and greet and discuss our way forward. Lastly, it turns out that we will have as our probable first test of empowered community decision-making an approval action board notice, since the board is planning a minor modification of a fundamental bylaw. As I told council last week, I was kind of surprised that the board is meddling with the bylaws already, but the proposed change is pretty benign. I've discussed this with Krista Spain, since he's the one on the board that's driving it, and it looks likely that the timing for this will be ICANN 59 in Johannesburg. And he and I are both in agreement that the public forum on the bylaws change should be held at an ICANN meeting rather than as a teleconference. And we are both in agreement that trying to do this in Copenhagen is going to be way too soon. And there's no tearing hurry on the part of the board to make this change anyway. In anticipation then of having to have an approval action board notice guideline in place soonest, I've begun work on this guideline as well. Fortunately, the approval action board notice process is pretty straightforward. It's the simplest of all the processes outlined in Annex D. And I hope to circulate a draft of this to the GRC prior to our face-to-face in Copenhagen, because we need to get this one in place pretty quickly. And that's it for me.
Okay, thank you. There's one question for you in the chat window. So David asks, what is the change being contemplated?
The change being contemplated is they want to... Chris is running the Board Governments Committee, and they want to carve out and set up another board committee to handle complaint, basically. I forgot exactly the technical term for the complaint. Independent review stuff, that's what it was. Chris wants to offload this out of his Board Governments Committee into a new committee that's devoted to dealing with this stuff. And that's a change in a fundamental bylaw. And the board is going about this the right way in that they have acknowledged that they just can't set up a new subcommittee and go on their merry way, that they actually have to put this one past the community. So that's the change. It's fairly benign. There's a blog post that Chris wrote that's on the ICANN website under Steve Crocker's blog that describes the specifics of what they want to do, and I refer you to that.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. If there are no more questions, so thank you very much for the update. So the next agenda item is on travel funding discussion. Just wanted to share with those of you who are not on the council. We have discussed, the council actually agreed to proceed and request more travel slots for the travel from ICANN. But, we're still not clear of how many, what the increase would be and how we're going to manage the new slots should they become available. So therefore, at this moment, we're a little bit slowing down with this travel funding guideline. So, any other business? Anything else? Something you'd like to share? None from David. Anyone else want to say something? Okay, none. So next meeting, will be in 2 weeks, same time, same place. One more thing I wanted to ask, are you going to Copenhagen? Who will not be in Copenhagen? Well, Alejandro definitely is going, Stephen will be there, David will be there too. Yorke will be there, that's a surprise. I'm sure that Kim will be there too. Yeah, I know that Kim will be there too because I saw her messages in Google Calendar. So I think we will need the space meeting in Copenhagen. I'm not sure if we have scheduled yet. Oh, the phone just forgot. Kim, could you remind me if we have a slot for face-to-face meeting in Copenhagen? That's true, actually, David is right. We need some funds for GRC party. Block 3. Okay, block 3, which is block 1 starts 9, block 2 starts whenever, and from 1:45 till 3 on Sunday. So please, if you're already there, just join us. Join the meeting. And if somebody can bring something nice for the party, it would be really, really very cool. Okay, if not, we will just do the usual boring stuff. Okay, so thanks a lot for being on the call. Thanks a lot for your contribution to the discussions and the actual document. So, talk to you in 2 weeks, definitely we'll see you in Copenhagen. So, have fun, and bye-bye.